Hello and welcome to GFW Radio, the podcast for July. No, God, one of these days, June 19th, 2008.
18th.
Oh, fuck it. I'm never doing that again. Why? Why bother? We're all here, and it's a happy, sad podcast. Happy because it's like full crew. We got everybody here today. Every fucking buddy.
Six chairs filled
with bodies. But one leaving us after today, Mr. Sean Molloy's last podcast.
Yes.
I know what else to say.
I'm leaving you all.
Other than you suck.
This news broke on Legendary Thread.
It did.
And we're I was begging you to save it for GFW, but I understand.
Well, that was my last one of those.
We know where your loyalty
is. The last one of those came before the last one of these, so.
Right.
Yeah. See, this way we can keep it in, it's all in the open right from the beginning. You don't have to save it for the last minute. And
go, right. It's not some big surprise. Yeah.
It is my chance to say that it's going to suck. It really sucks that you're leaving.
It does.
You were wonderful to work with all these years. We're losing a fantastic writer, thinker, and podcaster. And just an all-around great gamer. it's gonna suck.
But what we lose in gaming journalist, the Magnum PI movie gains a good replacement for Tom Selleck. And
that's
I just want to congratulate
you supposed
you
to say.
On, yeah, this on your to be. New job. And I think your stash is coming along really nicely. And I can't wait to see the movie, honestly.
It's gonna
be a surprise
special
career move, but you know. But it's a cool one.
I don't know. If you were paying attention, it's not that surprising.
You've been following your career very closely.
I mean, you spend every weekend, you know, driving your cigarette boat, you know, at 200 miles an hour, you know.
He's had every episode memorized for years now. He's always reciting Magnum PI lines around the office is very annoying.
It's pretty obvious that this is what you always wanted. You know?
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. It is a dream come true for me.
All right.
I'll miss you too.
Another news. I guess we're not allowed to say where you're going yet. I mean, other than the Magnum PI movie.
Yes, we already
but at some point.
I figured it out when you told me you played Half-Life 2 Episode 2 with nothing but the Magnum and that you canceled your Chronicle subscription to subscribe to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer.
What? All the hints are there.
Being a fellow Lost fan, I was able to
unravel it.
So, yeah, we're going to miss you. I don't know who's gonna produce this thing now. One of you,
Skip was supposed to teach
me.
No,
Skip, we are in a crisis.
How to do things?
Really?
We are in a crisis.
It's really easy.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. And then I'm leaving for 3 weeks for Europa. So I don't know what the hell is going to happen here.
We're considering
you guys are on your own.
Stopping the show for that time, but we're also trying to figure out if we can get Bobito to keep coming in and. Whatever else we
but
could
you guys
do.
Could either well we, it could either be a season break, you know, like a TV show, summer break, or you got there's four of you,
we can keep going
without
we'll
us
figure it out.
Yeah,
you don't need me and Sean.
We should just get a speak and spell to say all the Jeff Green lines.
Right, just all just pre-record the same
and
bullshit.
Welcome to the Brodeo.
That
June 19th, 18th, July.
I am.
Damn this!
I can't remember anything
about the airport. You know?
Oh right, like the guy reading the magazine at the airport,
and then a couple other ones.
Old anecdotes.
Right.
You can just insert randomly.
Uh huh.
What?
Just general talk about you and the snack machine.
Oh right, yeah.
No, I don't know, though. I seriously, I mean, we'll do it.
The show must go on.
I'm guessing, but it's going to be 3 weeks of, like, do not want.
We should just promise not to talk about games at all.
People forget soon enough, you know. Out of sight, out of mind.
You'll never be forgotten. You're
that's what I wanted.
You're basically
that was fishing.
Yeah, you're fishing.
Tell me.
You're fishing for animated GIFs right now.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I know eventually this podcast is going to turn into a nonstop MGS4 talk, but we can't do that yet because Ryan's in the room. And Ryan has demanded no spoiler talk in front of him.
Oh, we need some spoilers.
We're spoiling the hell out of it afterwards.
Because he doesn't want to know that that Metal Gear Solid 4 ends with Snake being crucified.
Dang.
It's a fact.
That wouldn't be, you know, that'd be believable for this series.
Yeah, exactly. I know. It's
like, so if basically anything goes and you would believe something as dumb as that, why do you care about the spoilers?
I don't know. Because I do.
See, I don't care.
He wants to be surprised by it.
Yeah. I haven't played it. I'm not going to
be surprised at the things I'm not going to understand.
You don't have a PS3, right?
I borrowed one from work.
But you bought the game anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I did.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wait, I thought you do have a PS3.
No.
He traded it.
Oh, he sold it. As old as the airport one.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I didn't feel bad about that. I don't know. I think I've done that in the past for other things. I'm not sure.
Did you buy the collector's edition?
Actually, I think I've done that, too.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, that's cool.
Why did you buy the collector's
edition? Wait, what is in the collector's edition?
A Blu-ray. There's a bonus Blu-ray, but I don't know what's on it because there's a spoiler warning.
Wait, wait, wait. You bought the version that comes with more movies? That is so
that's
crazy.
Awesome.
Oh, man. What if you put it in and it's just like a five-hour-long codec?
Yes, I'll watch it. That's cool.
So what else is in the box? You get like a Dakota ring or
no.
T-shirt? Anything?
The box, the box is cool.
What else? That's
well,
it? Just a Blu-ray?
You get a bonus disc with, I don't know what's on it, because it says don't watch until you finish the game.
Mm-hmm. And okay. You get a
so that's it.
Box.
There's two discs.
Yeah.
Is there a manual? Special
yeah,
manual?
Well, I mean, there's the normal book? Game, and yeah. Then there's a bonus disc.
It's just a special box okay. That looks good yeah. Next to your various anime collections. You know, like it holds up next to those $100 DVD box sets of
Naruto,
like
Gundam.
Animated
Brian's looking at
girls
you.
And
you dick.
And
yeah, I don't
sorry.
Know about that.
So that's what we won't be talking about now.
Okay,
but later. Don't
later after
worry.
Ryan
you're,
leaves the
you're
room.
We're playing this game.
All
right. Right, and yeah, all of you listening who don't want spoilers, leave when Ryan leaves.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, you should just be doing that anyway.
Oh, shit.
There you go. Sean's not even at the door, and this dude's already stepping up to talk shit.
Dang.
Yeah, that's
my job. He's taking the show with him.
Yeah, that's Sean Malloy's job. Dude.
One of these days, Ryan, you need to bring your rants back, because I've told other people that you will rant and rant when you're not on the podcast, and they're amazing.
I do.
And you have now and then
they're
on the show.
But rants.
It's true.
Well, I'll find something to go off about. Maybe after I finish Metal Gear Solid 4.
Okay.
That's true. We know the secret of Ryan that people who only know him from the Quiet podcast don't know.
You had a good D&D rant on the last Legendary Thread.
Oh, did you?
Oh, I did, yeah. Were you not on it?
No, I was out.
Oh, yeah. I
went I heard you were going to be on. I skipped it.
Stupid. Dungeons and Dragons.
I still haven't seen the 4th edition. We are going to, like, play a game and record it. We always have these plans, and that never happened around here. The big hell? Plans. Yeah, sure.
Wait. What is 4th edition? Am I missing?
D&D.
The new D&D rules.
Wow. Nerd card revoked.
Last week.
Sorry. The only time I've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, the people I was playing with killed me in like 10 minutes.
Well, that's mean.
Yeah, that is mean.
Yeah, that was the only time I ever
played. Was it something you did? Like, did you provoke them?
No. I just think I wasn't cool enough to be part of the D&D crowd. See, that's the sad truth of my life is that I was too nerdy for D&D.
Wow.
Well.
So... I was too busy, like, worshipping MC Hammer and wearing, like, balloon pants and shaving lines into the side of my head.
Did you ever do that?
Yeah, yeah.
I had
a friend of mine put a peace sign into the back of my head, and I had, like, sort of a vanilla
God.
Ice haircut.
I shaved the Red Hot Chili Pepper symbol into a friend's head. I didn't want him. I advised that he not do it, but I was like, all right,
but you still
do
did it.
It,
man.
I can shave it's a straight line. I'll do it for you.
Yeah. I did a lot of crazy stuff. I like growing up in a little small town called Grand Prairie, Texas, I was always under the impression that being cool meant being like the people on TV, but that was not exactly the community standard of cool. So if you mimic MTV and show up to your middle school in Grand Prairie, Texas, totally crossed out, not mm-hmm. not cool. Backwards overalls.
You actually did that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
What was cool?
I would have pictured you more for, like the punky color green hair dye from, like, Hot Topic that fades to, like, a ash gray.
That was high school.
After two washes.
That was high school.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you do that?
I had pink.
Really?
But I didn't wash my hair, so it didn't fade.
It stayed true.
Yeah.
I had a blue period.
Really?
Blue period? Seriously. Blue hair?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it punky color?
No, it was something else.
I meant like his mood, like my blue period, you know.
Okay.
Did it
was a little of both.
Did it coincide with the Insane Clown Posse period?
No, I was actually post to my insane.
You were into posse. The insane clown.
No.
I thought my shit was embarrassing.
No, because dude, let's talk about now that we're going here. Do you want to talk about your history as an amateur wrestler?
Oh, no.
And your move.
Really? What?
No.
Dude, the sleigh ride, man. He would dress up as Santa Claus, and he had a move called the sleigh ride, but S-L-A-Y.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I had friends who were really into pro wrestling, including Michael Donahoe, if any of you guys know
right,
Michael
from,
Donahoe.
EGM.
We're from the same town, and him and all of our friends were really into wrestling, and they had a backyard wrestling thing. And we would like show up to the park, and you know, we would have like a couple of our you know bands play, and people would wrestle and hurt each other until the cops showed up and told us to go home after being like baffled that we weren't drinking. but yeah, I would dress up as Santa, and my character was Satanic Santa, and my killer move was the sleigh ride, but it was really bad because I was just sitting on people. And one time I sat, and I was a pretty big guy. I mean, I'm a big guy now, but I was like obese, and I sat like on my best friend.
Not like fat man stuff, though, right?
No, I mean
like, fat man here again, like that. Not that.
No. I mean, I was just pretty big. You know, I was on a McDonald's diet. I worked at a 7-Eleven and I drank Slurpees all day, and then I ate at the McDonald's across the street.
Okay. So you can do
the math there. This is before I became a pansy vegetarian.
Could you use your tit as a gravy bib?
No.
Like a wet nap or something.
did this become the white trash podcast?
I don't. when all the white trash started showing up. Oh god, yeah. But I felt bad because at one time I sat on my best friend Jacob and he really got hurt and like knocked the wind out of him, but he tried to come after me, you know, and he's got no reach with his arms, and so he kept on trying to punch me, and I was just pushing him back and back and back until he tripped and like hit his head, and it was a disaster, and he hated me for a couple of days.
Asshole.
Was he
the first recipient of the sleigh ride?
No, the other guys were like kind of into wrestling and into getting hurt.
His first passenger, rather.
Yeah.
If we ask Donahoe what a sleigh ride is he gonna know?
He knows. Yeah, he knows.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was this connection between you two guys.
Yeah, I was actually present the first time he ever got drunk. He was 16 years old. It was in a ravine behind a golf course, and it was a 40. We were all a little bit older. No, there was a little bit of water trickling through. It was like way out in the burbs, but we were significantly older than he was. I don't remember who befriended him, but we would come over. Oh, no, that sounds bad. No, but I don't remember who his like original connection was, but he totally fit into the crew because he was like totally into the games and the wrestling.
So did he take a few punches to the head over the years in this?
I don't remember Donahoe like wrestling a lot at the time.
I'm just asking.
I don't think so. He did play a lot of Japanese RPGs.
Those ravines, it was funny. Like there was some of you guys were like puzzled, right? You wanted to know more about this locale.
Tell me about this.
To me, that just immediately clicked because that's where everything happens. And you're like a 40 of like, of course, if not that, like the bottle of triple sec that someone fished out of their dad's thing.
Or Mad Dog.
No, it was like a mixer or something.
We called those dirt parties.
Kids I knew in the ravine... got a bunch of morning glories, which it's a flower, but if you make a tea out of them, it's just an insanely powerful drug and lethal. And they got off from some friend. This is like pre-internet days. They somehow got the recipe to make the tea, the morning glory, and they got like the proportions way wrong. So they had like a massive overdose. And when they took it, they all like shit their pants like right out there in the ravine. But then like other interesting stuff came out where like they went back and they all listened to the Cure's album Distortion. I mean, not Distortion, Disintegration. And so they, you know, everyone's sitting and listening through the one side of the album, singing along and doing air drums there in a band and stuff too. And then, you know, comes time to turn the tape over and they go to do it. And there's like no tape in the thing. But they were all on mark, though.
That makes it sound like a lot of fun.
That's a, yeah, that's quite.
Well, I mean, except for the shit in your pants thing.
Thanks for qualifying.
Which would be a really good segue into Metal Gear Solid 4. But
now that I think of it, I think he basically lost, like, John lost 2 months of his life because he has no accounting for him. After, like, from, like, the day after they did that for the next couple months, he has no memories whatsoever.
Can anyone account for them for him?
No.
No?
I think his ex-girlfriend can, but that's about it.
Wow. The imaginary cure can.
So while we're getting personal now, I want to start a new segment. You know, Anthony's nickname is Chuff. He's also known as Nurgle, but I want to start a segment known as Chuff Love.
Wait, how does he get Chuff?
Chuff?
That's his dwarf name.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's like my name and all the role-playing.
So it's self-appointed. You picked it.
Yeah.
So
Nurgle is not
cool
self-appointed.
With Chuff.
Chuff's fine.
Chuff. Okay. Chuff.
Chuff's so cool.
Chuff Love.
Do you want me to narrate, or would you rather take control of your own story?
You can narrate for a bit.
Okay, so
we
were shopping in downtown Berk. Oh, never mind. I'm sorry.
You didn't want to reveal where this was.
Okay, well, Anthony and I were shopping. We live in Missouri, and you know, so we were
shopping at a game store,
downtown
at a game
Berk,
store, right? And yeah. You know, we just gotten back from a comic store, and Anthony had a bag in his hand. It had a Walking Dead issue in it. And so this really nice and cute clerk in the game store comes up to Anthony and comments on the Walking Dead, says that she's a fan. And Anthony didn't really have much to say at the time. And so we just kind of finished
out
our shopping, and then we left.
Panicked.
And then we started to hear about it later in the week. Like, oh, my God, what did I do? Like, I fucked up, guys. I fucked up. Not really saying that, but, I mean, and we were like, it's all good. You can go back. So, Anthony, you are pretty interested in formulating a plan to
it's
go
true.
Back and make amends.
I was debating going back every day, telling Ryan that I might come in late so I could go take care of it. But I didn't know when she worked, and I figured I've only ever seen her on the weekends. So we were
trying to psych you up, too. Like, I even offered, because I was warning you. Well, first, I was almost psyching you out, because I was saying, like, there are going to be two guys in there working with her, and you got the stones to go right up to the counter with her flanked on either side. And just, like, lay it down, or do you want me to go and run interference and act like my Guitar Hero controller is broken? I need the guys to come over and help me place it to get you alone. And then we started coming up with, like, all these, like, pickup lines for Anthony to use. Actually, it was more in the form of telling him what not to do. So those included, like, hey, body by We Fit, or asking for her Animal Crossing friend code. And then,
or asking if I could trade in my number for hers.
Yeah, the edge card. Can I get the edge card to your heart?
I mean, you'd have to give him like $30.
Yeah,
with your number.
The best
joke.
Going to
turn around and sell it for $35.
Yeah. The best joke though is I've referred to ForMyWife.wmv before, and that's like a legendary unpublished video of YouTube user Demonious X masturbating for his ex-wife at the camera. And then waving with his greasy hands. After there's more details, I'll spare you. But so we this beget a new legend, and that's for my store credit.wmv.
Oh,
but okay. But the amazing thing to me about
Anthony's
this
shot just went out the window here.
The amazing thing to me about this, no. Anthony's a fine boy, and Sean is the disgusting perv who's saying all this.
Yeah, Anthony didn't like yeah. This was when
suggestion.
I say us.
Anthony's
this was the usual goon squad on the online talking, and we're all sort of, but we're really just joking. We're excited. We're pulling for you, Anthony.
So what happened?
Yeah.
I went back on that Saturday, and walked in there, and I didn't see her, and I was like hoping to God that she wasn't working so that I wouldn't have to actually do it.
Like, oh man,
because I was so scared. It's intimidating.
No, it is.
Yeah, because how do you do it in the
not
game
only
store?
It's like
a
not only because it's like the place of employment, but you know, she's kind of intimidating looking a little bit.
Yeah,
so
in a good way.
In a good way,
not
yes.
a bad way.
Yeah, well.
Not
any
a
girl
B. Arthur
that, well, when they're attractive, it's like it makes it more intimidating.
And she is, which B. I wanted Arthur. To say, like when I showed up today, I heard you guys talking about, and all you guys said was like girl at a game store, and I knew immediately what girl you were talking about because this is the town that I live in, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to say the place, but I knew immediately what girl you were talking about because she's like notoriously. This is not the kind of girl you see in a typical game store. You're like,
I gotta
when you walk in there
tonight
with your stupid nerdy video games, you're like, maybe I should go to another place.
Yeah. Yeah. So I rolled in there and she was working with like two coworkers and it was super busy.
As predicted,
yeah. And so I started like perusing the store, but only half perusing, like hoping that she'd come over and ask me if I wanted some help with something, and then I'd like have that breakaway from like the two people behind the fucking void of the counter.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen. So 20 minutes later.
That's a lot of browsing.
20 minutes later?
20 minutes.
I don't want to talk about
how much did you learn about like
GameCube
Carnival
has
games
a lot of stuff. Fine games that all right, he had to read the back of the box of.
So then like, you know, as she was taking out all the garbages and I was like, all right, shit. As she leaves the store, that's going to be like my only chance.
Dude, this is what begat Matt and James's alternate reality version where you ambushed her and you sprung out of a trash can with a handful of roses. Fucking cookie, not Cookie Monster, what Oscar the Grouch.
I like Cookie Monster better.
Hey!
No, that wasn't the case at all. I waited
out
front.
That did not happen.
I waited out front of the store for her to take the garbage and come back. And then while she was coming back, I walked up. And
was she taking out the garbage because the store was closing?
No.
Garbage time.
Picturing it's like 10 at night.
No. Yeah, okay. This was like
you could have used like Telly's
day
famous line from the movie Kids, like, I barely know you, but I feel like I love you. I want to buy you corn dogs or nacho or something.
It works
every time.
At this point, she has to realize that you have been in the store for almost a half hour now, right?
I went with something equally lame, which was like, I came down here for two reasons,
and one was
to get Metal Gear 4, which I had, and that's what I said.
The other was to give you
Let's
a sleigh ride.
About that for a second. Yeah, and the other one I was to make up for the previous weekend where I fucked up. So.
Oh, right on.
Nice.
That's
did
pretty.
It,
you did it. You. That's pretty manly there.
But then she was.
Is that
like,
how you posed it to
then
her?
Then she. Yeah. Said no.
She shut you down?
No, she didn't. But oh. I mean, yeah, I haven't hung out with her or anything yet. But oh.
Then you saw her, like, talk about the comic someone else had at the counter. Oh, we've got the new Thor. I like Thor.
Yeah, I know.
That's our thing. No. That's what we do.
It's all some gigantic scheme to get me to trade in games.
Like, you're in a dangerous phase now. I don't want to get you nervous because it's all good, and you pulled through, and you are now the king. But as I understand, you're going to be playing games together. And I just don't – my next bit of advice, avoid situations where you're taking turns playing and watching each other play. And let's hope neither one of you gets like, fucking quit trying to open that door. It's not going to open. I've already seen you try it.
I honestly hope to God that no one or herself does not ever listen to this. She'll just know, like, I just talk about you to all my coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone.
Did she know your last name?
No.
If she is listening, Anthony's a fine boy. I approve of this relationship entirely.
Whoa, don't scare her now.
You do have my blessing.
But I think you have.
And if
balls.
It doesn't work out, if she likes older married Jewish guys.
I think it's amazing though that you actually did this in the physical meat space, because
let's flip it into a meat space. Break that down a minute. What is a meat space?
You know, it's not my space.
Let me know about the fourth edition meat space.
Okay. No, but honestly, like, how many people your age, how old are you?
25.
25. How many people your age are asking girls out in person?
I know.
They're all like lurking on True. MySpace, poking girls in Facebook, doing True. All this passive-aggressive fucking yep. pussy shit. And you went up to a girl at her place of employment, and you talked to her, and you asked her out.
Like that, a real man.
That is a seriously amazing skill that like 99% of people do not have.
Hair.
Let's go to the part, though, where after I asked her out,
yeah.
then she wanted to talk, and I had only mentally prepared myself to ask the question.
Oh, boy.
So then I was like,
did?
No, I mean, it was fine.
That's cool.
I just wasn't totally ready for her to continue to sit there and want
to
talk.
Forgot to make flashcards.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem was you immediately slipped into a long explanation of the storyline of the Metal Gear Solid series. It took like 45 minutes, and you basically looked like a psychopath.
Actually, she talked to me about Metal Gear 4 and how she was going to dress up as one of the characters for the midnight release.
Really?
Which character?
Which one, Raiden?
You look like, no, you look like Raging Raven.
The girl one that leads all the rebels.
Raiden.
Meryl.
No.
Sorry,
Meryl.
It's a dumb joke.
I see. Meryl.
And did you say, then I think you'd make a good Meryl or whatever?
Laughing octopus.
Nah, I don't remember what I said. Honestly, it was Beauty all blurred after that.
He's like, I'll be your Solid Snake.
Come on, guys.
Right. Well, we need to follow this relationship over the next number. Oh, I'll be in Italy.
Hence the birth of Chuff Love.
Chuff Love, right.
I know, right.
It's a series within a series here at GFW Radio.
I know we have at least a few female listeners, and they can submit advice.
Advice for Chuff.
Yeah. There's at least nine.
A few. Female listeners.
Nine female listeners. A few is three.
I know. I was telling
two of them are forced by their boyfriends to sit through it.
Yeah. I was telling Sean I just need to start finding like random places I go on a regular basis and asking girls out at each one of them and just coming back each week with the story of how it went.
That like, that would be like a better podcast.
Kind of turning
than
you into
this.
A Howard Stern character, though.
That's true. Yeah.
It was all sincere and puppy love, and you just went and ruined it, man. What are you going to, like, Taco Bell tonight? I'd like the three of those double beef burritos. Your phone number, please.
Honestly, there's no way I could stomach up enough nerve to do that anytime soon again. It was like it took.
Yeah. That's really
it
that's
wasn't
a hard
liberating.
Thing to do.
Like after you did it, you weren't like, I can do anything.
Not quite.
No.
While we're on the subject of love,
when aren't we?
I got a quick hero of the web that comes from the Ron Paul official forums.
Oh God.
I love you, Ron, but that's fucked up, dude. Not the message I need to hear right now. For the last year, I gave up my self-indulged lifestyle of being blind and self-absorbed in internet video games. Since I've heard about you, the message, and the revolution, this board and multiple daily Google News searches have been my routine in life, replacing Unreal Tournament, all versions. I'm going through a lot right now in my life that words can't begin to explain. Now I've got to deal with this news from you, Ron. I've had an episode in my life that caused me to break down last night, and now I am in tears for the second time in one day. This is truly fucked up. I was pulling for you, dog. I still am. I spent the last half hour weeping, not crying, but weeping. My two-year-old son saw me weeping and came to me and hugged me. I love my boy. My first tears were for me because I stared in the face of impossibility, believing that some way, somehow, that we, the revolution, would overcome the odds in McCain and the RNC. And he goes on and on. I actually had to do some editing because McCain, anytime McCain comes up, in this case, it's, well, I'll read what he wrote. No endorsement of it. It's McFaggot. And he later calls him Juan McFuckup. And sorry, I just got all serious now. Shit just got real. but then he finishes up his insane tirade with, please, Dr. Paul, remember, please reconsider.
So, oh, man.
Sorry,
I can't. It's like it blows my mind that the Ron Paul people call themselves the revolution. Yeah. Like, that's the most impotent group of, like, nobodies on earth, and they think they're gonna take over the whole fucking country with their fucking jobless college student dropouts.
Ron Paulicast.
Plus, Ron Paulicast.
You've got some
Ron Paul people are on like the level of Scientologists. I'm sorry, they're fucking crazy.
Yeah, and now you're gonna get like 20 gonna,
I don't care.
I got so many PMs last time I dared say anything about that.
Yeah,
whatever. I just got. What is this shit now? Like, you see the comments in my current blog, like the one about how I'm tearing the country apart.
You personally.
You? Yeah.
What, with your Metal Gear Solid
Yeah,
blog?
Sean's yeah. feeding into and partisanship that's devolving our nation.
Devolving the nation.
Oh, man, the Democrats and Republicans are split on Kojima now?
And then this other thing.
Oh, fuck.
It's true.
What does Obama, what's his take on MGS4?
The other one was about, like, my hidden liberal agenda. And what did that shit say? Something also about, I forget his name, that Rush Limbaugh and this and that. I don't know.
I don't understand hidden
agendas. I really try not to read
it. If your agenda is hidden, then how fucking effective can it be? Yeah, you know, like you're obviously not getting much done.
Up there.
True.
Yeah. If it's a Judas Priest album played backwards, pretty effective.
Yeah, right? That's true.
You are poisoned.
So how did you get to this Ron Paul message board, by the way?
Yeah, wait a minute.
I got that from Rory, and that came by way of something off of Forums. I'm almost positive. One of their sub forums.
Ah.
They tend to track the
My favorite part there was his clarifying internet. It was all versions of Unreal Tournament.
All versions.
That was the best part. That's when Rory was like casually reading it to us.
To show just how committed he was to this. Unreal 2.
Yeah. All versions.
All.
That's just when Rory was reading it to us casually, that's where I stopped and said, dude, send me that, please. No. I want it.
This is going on the air.
I don't know. I'm sure that there must be like just to backtrack and not be killed. Must be reasonable Ron Paul people out there. But, like, I don't know. Everyone I meet is totally wacky. I mean, I even met someone in my wife's finance PhD program at Berkeley who's a Ron Paul fanatic. And I was like, dude, that guy wants to go back on the gold standard. And you're getting a PhD in finance. Are you insane? And he was like, oh, but he'd never be able to do that. but he wants. I mean, I don't even like people like pick and choose what they want to believe about that guy. Like,
you can't
just accept the whole package or something. Anyway, it's the same thing with Obama.
You would like to read this in its entirety, then, because it hits up all the fun stuff. Probably the gold standard as well.
Yeah. So is that it for this week?
Yeah, Ryan, that's our. I don't know. We've all been playing.
You've all been playing. Has anybody been playing anything else? Is it all Metal Gear with everyone in this room but me?
Yeah.
I've been playing some WoW.
What?
Some WoW. Well, we'll save that for the next podcast. We're legendary threading it after
this. What are you playing there, Jeff? Anything?
I'm still playing Mass Effect on the PC.
Yeah.
How do you like it?
I like it a lot. I'd like it a lot more if it didn't crash every 2 minutes.
We just put up a very positive review today.
Did we?
Yeah.
What'd we give it?
A.
Minus.
A minus. Oh.
Unbelievable. A minus.
Who reviewed it? Sean?
Scooter, I think.
Which means
A minus is probably about what I would have given
it. Which means it's just as good as Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah.
But not as good as Boom Blocks.
Yeah, there's people immediately thinking that. Yeah, this is a problem, though. God, now you're going to force
it. Yeah, we're making fun of it.
I didn't want to make it up, but now I feel like I have to.
Okay.
Because, like, on One Up Yours last week, they were comparing the scores in between different games of different genres and presumably written by different critics in another, you know, publication. And I hated to hear that because it opens you up for the reverse. And that would be, if it didn't make sense to compare, you know, the review scores for any two games of any genres, and even though there were different critics that reviewed them, then that means people can compare whatever. They can say that Boom Blocks is, a better game than Super Mario Galaxy or something. And it's like, I don't think any of us believe in that or support
absurd.
That.
Yes, it is absurd. is the right word.
As the reviews editor of the One Up Network,
it is absurd.
I say that's ridiculous. You can't. That's unfair.
Why is it ridiculous? Comparison.
Because otherwise, people are going to point out that Ryan Scott thinks that Puzzle Quest is better than Metal Gear.
He probably does.
I think that Puzzle Quest is awesome, but it's like I didn't review Metal Gear.
Right. Well, plus it's you're playing that game obviously for completely different reasons and at different times.
Right. Than you would.
But let's be serious on the objective funometer.
The objective funometer.
The objective funometer.
I thought it was phenometer.
Yeah.
Well, I fucked up. That was me being subjective.
Stop being subjective, Sean.
So I'm really liking Mass Effect on the PC. And I think the bug.
Where are you?
I think the crash is actually have nothing to do with the game. I believe it's my effed up PC. Where am I?
In a
non-spoilery way. Well, I've gone through at least three of the huge, other planet long extended missions. I don't know how to do this without spoiling.
Yeah,
but
right. Maybe you just have to.
I believe I'm well
spoil.
On.
Please
I think
spoil.
I'm well on the way. You know, I'm a good 20 hours in. I'd say I don't know how long the game is. I've been dorking around with some of the side quests, just going to other planets and checking them out. And I've been enjoying the varied terrain and the varied environments of the different places, except for the fact that I noticed by the third planet, and now it's driving me fucking crazy every time. It's just one of those random suspensions of disbelief that it's nothing. It's stupid, but I can't stop being annoyed by it. No matter, you can go to all different solar systems in this game. Have you guys all played it?
This is why I didn't get an A+, right?
Right. No.
This particular reason right here.
I didn't review it.
It was on the cons, you know. It was on the negatives, you know. So that's obviously why.
Right.
Oh, that's why it must be.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you play games like me.
You subtracted points.
When you start the game.
But the sound was an 8.5.
So what's up with this part?
What? Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you play games like me, you turn it on and it's a C, and then as you play, like, you add a C plus if, like, something cool happens, and then, like, oh, this is annoying, back down to C. That's right. How you play, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Usually with, like, a tally thing right next to my computer.
I could do it in my head.
Yeah, I got it right.
That's actually how I deal with people, too. Like, generally, like, when I meet
someone, you're now a B minus.
They're just about at C until they prove me wrong.
Yeah,
you know, I'm kind of a pessimist.
You're nice. I don't have a lot of faith in humanity. People get an F from me right off the bat.
Yeah, really? Me too. They got to work up from a D.
There's some truth in that. Maybe just for me, but, like,
yeah,
like you see someone, like, you see, like, an anime avatar. And then you immediately drops them down to about a D, and then like they can work their way back up.
An anime avatar with the Metal Gear eye patch.
That's a D minus.
Yeah.
No, I'm just playing. But the real point in there is that we do make assumptions.
Yeah,
and sometimes they're accurate. Sometimes they're really accurate.
Well, I assumed I wasn't going to like this game. And I ended up really liking it a lot.
So what was your problem?
The problem was the elevators. Not the fact that there's so many of them, because there are, which is what I guess they use for the load time. It's no matter what planet you're on.
This is the Mask Effect.
Right, they have elevators.
The same?
Yes. Because you're going to different solar systems, different galaxies. It's like this whole universe in this game. All the elevators were designed by the same company.
Otis. They're everywhere.
Because they all have the same green button. I don't know. I just thought
it's a monopoly in all the restaurants at Taco Bell.
Yeah. That one thing bothered
Demolition
me.
Otis
it's a little thing.
Too.
Yeah.
But I wanted to see one other elevator design on some other planet.
That's worth an A minus.
That's why I got
the minus. You should download the elevator pack.
I'm just kidding. The elevator pack will do that for me. Yeah.
It's only like $5, and you get like 6 or 7 different elevators.
Really?
Yeah.
Different.
You even get a glass one.
That's perfect downloadable content.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That'd be cool.
The original
I still haven't played that game, but I was thinking about playing it on PC because I didn't play it on Xbox.
I'm loving it.
Same. I still
played on that over Xbox. Yes.
Even with all the crash bugs, because what's happening to me is I'm crashing straight out to the desktop, no warning. It's just I move and all of a sudden I'm at the desktop. But I can immediately reload it and be back in. And I like the game so much that pain in the ass is actually not deterring me.
Do you find yourself playing specifically as like a good guy or a bad guy, or are you just kind of taking it as it comes?
I am being a paragon almost 100% of the time, except when the person I'm talking to is incredibly annoying. Then I'm willing to go down to the medium or the shut the fuck up.
So basically you're playing it like
I'm being as good as I can, and you're still annoying. Fuck you.
So you're playing it like how you imagine you might in real life. If
pretty
you were a
much.
Badass with a gun.
Yeah.
Fuck this guy.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I said I'd help you, and you're still whining. So, you know, you got one more chance, one more line of dialogue where you're being a dick, and you're out.
I'm picking
fuck
that
you.
The red dialogue off.
Yeah.
Is your character
don't test me.
Is your character a guy or a girl?
It's a guy. Oh. I don't cross game in general.
Uh-huh.
I did in EverQuest 1. I did in EverQuest 1.
Insecure, are we?
Well, I mean,
you should see my tits in Kone.
I just dress up in real life while playing as a guy in these games. Oh. I still dress up as a girl behind
That's
my computer
the only way
desk.
To satisfy your urges, you know?
Yeah. I still have some nice lingerie that I wear while playing WoW.
So, I mean, are you into the game story-wise?
I
mean, that's
I am.
Kind of what I was interested
no,
in.
No, I am. That's what I'm saying is that BioWare does this to me in a way that almost no other game company I can say does, where the story, I actually do get sucked into the story after a while. Sometimes there's a little bit of like, I don't know about this. Mm-hmm. But in the case of this game, it got to me.
This was a slow burn for me.
It was a very slow burn. I had to get out of the Citadel city area to do it. But they do enough kind of nice sort of moments of not like big like, ooh, turns of character, but just sort of like, oh, shit. Turns of characters that get to me. There's a difference
That's
between
a fine
ooh
distinction.
And oh shit. Big difference. You know, I mean, it's not this fake, like, last minute, like, bogus twist where, what, Ryan? Ryan's raising his
hand. You're going to knock the wall down.
You're tearing down.
I'm knocking the wall down?
Tearing down the wall.
That's how excited I am.
Jeff's second job is Kool-Aid man.
Give him a pen to eat.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'll stop tearing down the wall.
Whoa, shit.
Keep your shoes on, pen out of your mouth, and the wall from falling down.
Yeah, I won't step on my glasses. Okay. Like the scene with the I'll just hint at a spoiler, but the scene with the giant insect queen.
Yes.
Then controlling the
I know what you're talking about.
Right?
That's a good
scene. Does any one of us here care if you say it in explicit detail?
But it's, when
like,
did,
if you're going to tell me, like, how many eyes this Insect Queen has,
no,
and it's
going
to push
that.
Me
it
over
just,
some threshold of wanting to play the game.
When did the spoilering thing turn into such a crazy, like, religion? I mean,
you're right.
That you didn't, like, reveal, like, crucial story moments. That's something. Like,
people want to experience it for themselves.
But it's like, I don't want to see that there's a snow level, okay?
Right.
Don't tell me that there's a snow level.
I've been looking at the fucking screenshots for 2 years.
You're right.
Reading about them.
I mean, it gets crazy, though.
I mean, I know what he's talking about here, because this is one of those moments that, like, made me go, I like this game because I wasn't expecting the following thing to happen.
I mean, I can sort of understand that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, you're going along. It's kind of your basic space opera. You know, there's some mystery to be solved having to do with this, you know, this beacon that has something to do with some wiped out old civilization. And you're following this mystery along. But then every once in a while, there's a cutscene where they do things to the characters or in certain moments that are just nice pieces of storytelling because you didn't see it coming. You know, the story's on a straight trajectory that you see in every other game, but then they will do these kind of nice little curveballs
that
make you go,
curveballs that are surprising because they were, like, inconceivable, or are they you know, sort of, like, delightful because if you had thought about it long enough, you maybe could have anticipated it, but you're sort of slapping yourself hard.
There's nothing, like, preposterous in this game that I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not I mean, and that's what it feels like to me, just good storytelling. Like, as I've been playing this, I've been thinking, if this was a movie, I'd be enjoying this movie a lot.
And in fact, the way the story progressed, a lot of the stuff at the beginning that I thought was stupid, I'm like, why is that there? That's dumb. No one thought that through. Later, 10 hours later, you're like, oh, that's why that was there. And it's actually like, okay, that's not stupid anymore, and I'm sorry I called it stupid before.
It's the whole Chekhov, and if there's a shotgun in the first,
it's going to show up in the third act. Yeah,
it mostly had to do with, like, when they started explaining how the Citadel works, and I just did not buy it. I was just like, well, how did civilization advance this far without anyone asking these questions? And then, like, later it kind of is like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
So Jeff, I got... Yeah. So which way are you leaning? You're gonna go and sexually pursue the human or the alien? Because at some point you gotta make a choice.
Gotta make that choice.
And just remember that this is your only chance to get with an alien. It's never gonna happen again. You know, you get one chance. You've spent your whole life getting with humans.
She's pretty hot, this alien, too. You know, I'm definitely, like, you know, have looked, you know, done double takes with the monitor going, fuck. I mean, she's blue. She's got these kind of weird gill things.
And just the mystery. You don't know what's down there. I mean, it could have teeth. It could...
Now you're traumatizing me. I guess I got to stick with the human.
I wanted to get with
Kaiden.
As a guy, and it wouldn't let me, and then that's when I turned renegade. I was like, fuck you, game. I'm going to start shooting people.
So there are only two, like, mate options in the
game? And they're both girls, yes. Even if you are a girl.
Really?
Yeah. You can be a girl, and...
And then that's still your option.
Well, wait. They
allow lesbians.
That's right. If you're a girl, there's a guy option, too. Am I right?
There's a guy option.
Oh, there is.
But there is also the alien option.
The alien is not
what you think.
Female.
That's what I was going to suggest, is the alien got both parts before Robert got to
She's gender neutral. She's not.
So you just spoiled it for me.
Yeah, they said that at the beginning.
Yeah.
They did?
That her, like, I wasn't paying her whole race.
The whole race is just
no,
no
you
gender.
Were paying attention. It just fueled your interest.
They all look...
I didn't want to hear it.
They all look like females, but if you read the lore, they have no gender whatsoever.
She kicks it two ways, like the Now You're Cooking line of girls' toys.
They're adaptable.
The rolling pin's a cookie cutter.
Wait, how can a rolling pin be a cookie cutter?
It's not like the Crying Game. I didn't spoil it.
Okay, it's not okay. It's not like I would make that decision and there'd be a cutscene of me going into the room.
No, you should know what you're getting into by now.
Come here, big boy.
But maybe you would have, since you hadn't been paying attention. That would have been pretty funny.
Yeah, it would have been. Or not. So anyway,
did you play Jade Empire?
No, I did not.
Oh,
I feared that
Jean
game.
Malloy play Jade Empire.
I played, but did not finish Jade Empire.
Which do you like better?
I like Mass Effect better.
Okay.
But I played a little bit of this on Xbox, and for some reason I couldn't get behind it on Xbox. I think my brain goes into a different mode when the Xbox is on, and I want something faster paced than the slow pace of a game like Mass Effect. I think I need my RPGs to be on the PC. That's just me, but I think that's the way it has to be. So when I heard Dr. Ray, you know, and Greg and others at BioWare say that they thought this was their best game way back when I was just dabbling on the Xbox, I was just like, I don't know what those guys are thinking, or they've lost it on the way. But now that I'm deep into Mass Effect, I definitely think this is holding up with the best games that this company has done.
A fine effort indeed, yes. Truly.
Jeff was like, the only way I can end this is with a funny voice.
I can't. I was just getting self-conscious of pimping this game. Yeah, like.
I need to take myself down a notch.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
It's good.
What is this?
I don't know. It's somebody's cue card from some other podcast, which just goes to show you how little we prepare. We don't have fucking cue cards.
Hey, Sean has some printouts.
Those are
That's true.
I got
typed out cue cards.
I know. Somebody, not only is it a cue card, but it's typed. That's true.
On a typewriter?
On blue. On special blue cards.
Are we going to read it, or are we just going to
start
reading it to ourselves?
We don't want to out this other podcast. No.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Is it a good question?
No. Yeah. It's kind of
right.
boring.
So if you don't like Metal Gear Solid 4, are you a peasant? That's the question.
So,
are you
an indentured servant? are we gonna take a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break. Okay. And I guess, Ryan, do we have to throw you out of here?
I'm getting out of here for the Metal Gear Solid 4 talk.
Okay.
Do you have any last words for Sean Malloy? Any last public words?
Public words. Gosh, no pressure.
You should tell him you wanted to hang out for the rest of his last podcast working with you, but you didn't want to spoil Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right. Robert just summed it up for me.
So he likes you, just not that much. You know?
Not more than he likes the game.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what happens to Vamp.
Dang. Yeah.
He gets shot and he stands back.
No. You're going to take that, Ryan? That was an actual spoiler.
Thanks for ruining it for me.
Blah. Okay.
Well, no, well,
let's take a break.
All right.
Well, Sean Malloy, well, it's been good working with these 2 years, and, you know, Sean Elliott pretty much summed it up. Like, it's a big loss, so.
We miss you. It's a big
game. I will reiterate, I am not dying.
Mm-hmm. We should have brought some, like, toasting glasses.
Well, you might
glasses.
As well be. No.
You're dead to us.
Thanks.
So.
No, you're welcome back anytime.
Yeah. Cool. I'll be back.
As long as you want to, you know, run the stuff.
Yeah. You still have to produce, though.
Yeah. Turn the magic silver wheels or whatever the hell I'm doing over here.
God, we're so glad you came back. We couldn't figure this out.
Garage Band is hard. Really, okay. I mean, really, this is easy.
No, it's not.
Anyone can do it. I swear.
No, we can't.
What's not easy is cutting to our break.
Okay, we'll be back. Okay. Maybe.
Wow, that was. I can't do mine if I'm laughing.
We were. That was our dolphin off. Robert Ashley.
It was
me.
Really short.
It was.
We can both do dolphin. Yeah. But our
mine
techniques
started
are vastly different.
This is a sheep.
That was. Yeah, yeah, that was supposed to be a dolphin.
Pretty good. That's
I can't do it now.
Ashley's.
I can't. Now I can't do it.
This is so convincing. Roberts is so convincing. I'm visualizing before me as this happens that you're a little kid at SeaWorld and he's an actual dolphin. You're the kid like sending dolphin
noises. I'm trying to imitate him.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I spent a lot of time by myself as a child.
Jeff's basically just going.
I can also sing songs as a chicken.
Really? Could you regale us before we get into the Metal Gear Solid
talk? You know, what should I say? Happy birthday.
His hand was twitching out the whole time. Like a fucking chicken leg or something.
I was possessed by the spirit of the chicken, man.
I don't know why people say we're the lowbrow podcast.
I don't know.
And that made as much sense as the beginning of Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yes, good.
Nice segue. Okay, so I guess I'm the only one in this room who has not played it. And it's probably not going to
play. You're the control group, then. You can just listen to this insanity.
I'm halfway through Metal Gear Solid 1, so I'm way behind. But I have the gist of sort of what at least these games are about.
By the way, this next whatever minutes going to be filled to the brim with
spoilers. If we didn't make that clear before, if you don't want this game spoiled, just turn it off. Don't be mad if you hear them now, because we've warned you numerous times. Yeah. You hear them after this last warning here.
Please leave.
It's your fault.
You're playing one? You're halfway through the first one?
Yeah.
So it's like basically you're listening to the Beatles before acid. Like... It's not,
right.
Yeah. Okay. You're playing the game before it turns to utter insanity.
That's about right.
Okay, yeah. So I'm listening to One's got its moments. Please Please Me, yeah. And you guys are on I Am the Walrus, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Okay.
We're beyond I Am the Walrus.
Please Me at this point is still kind of, there's still some weird shit. I mean, I've seen, you know, there's guys named Revolver Ocelot, and, you know, he got his hand cut off.
Let's just say you're on Revolver then.
Yeah, so no, it's a wacky day tripper.
Okay, but it gets really, really weird, right? After later on,
you're a day tripper on your way to Strawberry Field
forever.
All right.
Stop right, blowing my mind, guys.
No more watch. Yeah.
Okay, right.
I'm sorry for.
Okay, so so the game's been out a week now, or less than a week.
Yeah.
Sean, you were not on One Up Yours because you're not on that podcast anymore. But they talked about it this past week.
Right. Yeah. I didn't get the game until after they taped that, like Friday. I didn't start playing until Friday evening, and then I spent like all that night and all of the weekend poop-socking it.
So one thing we do know is what they talked about on One Up Yours and just the reviews in general, apparently everybody who said Grand Theft Auto 4 was the greatest fucking game ever needed to wait another month and a half, because now this one's the best game ever, right, at least since GTA 4, according to a lot of these reviews.
Well, yeah. It's
not every review. In fact, probably less. There is it lower?
What's the quote? Let's get the quote from Jeremy Parrish's review. Not from his review, but from a comment on the review.
It was like, this game is an A++++. I regret ever playing any game I ever played before this one.
I'd like to repeal.
He regrets.
Yes, wow. He regrets.
So it's just like the next stage is like, I regret having even been alive prior to this game.
Nothing mattered.
There's nothing left for the next game that's better than MGS4 now. The hyperbole bar has been raised so high now. What are you going to say?
We'll just have to invent a new language.
Triple A game hyperbole.
That's all I can say.
So this is not like.
So let's not dwell on that. I mean.
Right. All right. So you.
Let's get into.
You take it away from here.
You finished it.
I did.
I'm on the tail end of Act 3. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you are.
I think I'm in Act 3. I'm about 9 hours in,
and I'm only like 2. Okay.
Like, I think I'm at 11.
So who would just wants to start? I mean, with your impressions. I mean. Like, I can launch in. Any one of you are welcome to.
I could say that I really was a big... I was pretty into the original Metal Gear Solid, and I played 2 and found it slightly baffling but really fun.
Same.
Then I desperately tried to play 3. Like, when 3 came out, Snake Eater, like, I tried to play the original version of it and just could not deal with... I couldn't deal with, like, the wide-open spaces with, like, the worst... overhead camera thing. I couldn't deal with like hiding in the bushes every 2 minutes. I used to play that game with a book, because when I got caught, I'd find my hiding space, then read the book for 2 minutes.
This has been a long-standing problem, I think, with the series.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not so much now, because it is a viable option to just sort of forego stealth when you are caught.
Yeah.
But if you are either in those games, or if you are determined that you do want to take a stealthy approach, or some sections in Metal Gear Solid 4 where you do have to, in fact... Yeah, the timers, the series of timers.
Three timers.
Takes so long that you're better off doing something, or in most cases, a lot of us, like Sean and I were talking, we'll just do something suicidal. Then you just go stand out in the open and let them kill
you.
Because you'll start again with the full health bar, and you won't have to... It will take less time to reload the game than it will to sit there and wait and wait and wait.
Yeah. And I mean, and I couldn't finish that one, so I bought... the subsistence version with the better camera, and I tried to play it again, and I got about 6 hours in and literally took it to EB Games so I would stop trying to play it, because I got so infuriated. I was like yelling and I was just the game had turned into
a pussy, and this is why it's good you're not reviewing it.
Exactly. I'm a mega pussy. But
sorry. But, I have to get like the people on the internet off my mind. I think we should all make a pact after this discussion that we will not look at any commentary whatsoever.
You are so good.
Podcast for a blog. I know I'm tempted to. I've done well. I haven't looked at commentary for my blog. I've had people paste me some lines from it. But I think to maintain our sanity and to just know that in the same way that, like, you know, if you're on Company Heroes and as soon as I said that, I'm like, someone's going to respond negatively about that. But I refer to that because I play that game a lot. So if I'm in the chat channel and there are people talking about how global warming's a lie, climate change is bullshit, Obama is a terrorist and a Muslim, like, I have no more interest in reading
people
their
who know the
comment
truth.
than a lot of this other stuff. But it's just like getting to the point where you say, yes, there are people out there whose thoughts and opinions you have zero interest in.
Sure. Yeah. But the thing is, though, like, after that, I kind of was not even going to deal with the new one. I couldn't see how it would be, you know, fun to play. And I was really surprised how like, just as the game had changed to the point of being so much less stressful and having so much more release in it. Like, my problem with 3 specifically was that it was just constant tension. You were just waiting. You were hoping not to get spotted and have to wait around for 3 minutes. So you're always on edge, and there was never any release until you got to these, like, boss battles, you know, out of nowhere, or you get to, like, a cinematic and you're like, oh, okay, now I'm not going to be caught. I've reached, like, a checkpoint. But something has happened in the game that I would say is nearly on the level of the transformation from, like, Resident Evil, the original series, to Resident Evil 4, in that I think they really give you more of a tense and release kind of feel, where, you know, there's still tension there, but if you get caught, you can kill the dudes and run for it. You can make it out. You can, you know, play it more boldly, not play so that you're sneaking, like, as slow as possible, hoping not to get caught. I play it a lot more boldly than I played the other games, and I don't really, if I get caught, I can make it out. It's fine. Mm-hmm. And I just find it so much more enjoyable as a game, apart from any, like, story considerations or any of that stuff. I find it so much more enjoyable than 3 had been, and I can actually play it and have a good time, you know?
I'm kind of the point where, like you said, like, there is that definite release, but in my head it's kind of like I've realized that, like, none of it matters. Like, I'm picking up so many weapons, and it's so easy to get out of a situation by just mowing everyone down with one of the 900 machine guns you happen to have picked up, that it's just like, I don't feel the tension part of it anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I'll go through an area, and maybe later, there, like you said, later there's some areas where you definitely have to stealth through. But I feel
there are some very
I feel like once it clicked that, like, shooting was an option, more so than the other ones where I would totally just give up if I got spotted.
Yeah.
There's another...
I realize it's, like, beyond just an option, it's just like, just shoot everyone and get to the next area and you're done. It's fine.
I think even the Mark II diminishes some of the detention when you are imposing the stealth option on yourself, when you're basically, you know, eliminating an option and you choose to do stealth, because you take the thing, and if you haven't used it yet, it's practically foolproof in most circumstances. So if there are two guards standing right beside one another, and as long as you know you can stealth and go invisible, and you pull up behind one and you electrocute him, he'll fall down right next to his comrade or whatever without alerting him. And then you just then repeat and get him. And then so what happens is his constant series of leapfrogging with the Mark II and then moving yourself forward to picking up their guns and so on and so forth. And that's like, no one's forcing you to play that, but it's worth pointing out, though, that, like, I remember, you know, when Tom Chick reviewed Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, his big problem, if I'm remembering correctly, and I could have this wrong, is that you could kick your way through the game.
Yep. Right.
And so some people were challenging this. It's like, well, does that mean everyone did that, or does that mean you had to do it if you found some? But for me, I think it's not absolutely game-rigged, but I do feel sort of like I'm exploiting it when I use the Mark II.
I feel the same
much,
way,
so
about the trank gun. Like, I feel like if there's 3 guys in, like, you know, a position where you should be able to sneak in a specific way and not get spotted, I feel like I can just pull out the trank gun and go, and they all fall asleep.
Hmm. I don't even bother with the trank gun. I just use the handgun with a silencer.
Yeah.
I just make sure they don't wake up.
A lot of times, like, maybe the guy next to him will get the exclamation point. But the camo suit's so effective usually in a position, like, if you're at 80%, which you can get that pretty easily.
Yeah.
The guy will get the exclamation point, and all you have to do is pop him in the head before he even spots you, and then he'll go down.
Right.
So there's lots of areas.
I'm just a bad shot, because I've had it where I've hit one, and they still have time to
If you give them a headshot, they go down right away.
And the other thing
Except for the fancy soldiers. You can't headshots with the Mark II or the other gun don't work with the fancy soldiers. That's what I call them, the ones that evaporate like Ninja Gaiden.
That's usually in an action sequence anyway. Yeah. Well, there's a couple parts where
there's like a sneak that sneak crazy people. Like labyrinth later
foot tracking
the set. Yeah, which was the worst thing that I've played in the game so far.
You're about to hit something even worse.
Really?
Right. I don't know what I was going to say. Well, to go into, I do want to say that I think this is like an absolutely unique game, and I'm glad that it exists because of its uniqueness, and because I think outside of the specific circumstances that created it, nothing like it would exist. And that's like, if you try to imagine any other studio proposing this game, a game that, in my experience, I don't know if anyone's got hard numbers, but I look at it in retrospect after having played it as being three-fourths non-interactive, and you'll see that that this ratio of gameplay to movies changes considerably after Act 3, from Act 3 forward. And I can't imagine anyone else getting the green light or, you know, having the budget, or if someone did, it being a studio with the budget to produce the quality of cutscenes that are in this game. And that doesn't mean that this is a remarkable game to me. It doesn't mean it's, I think it's the greatest game ever, but I think I want to get that out there. I'm thankful that someone is able to pursue this kind of game if that's the one that they want to make. But because of that, I don't look at a lot of people have been saying, like, this is the one that changes everything. This is the one that, you know, in the same way that all these other games change the gaming landscape and, you know, whatever other cliches we're seeing. I don't see this as that kind of game. I see maybe people cherry-picking specific ideas, and this goes along with my, like, larger reaction to it as being really uneven across the whole thing.
I've always felt that, yeah.
I don't imagine anyone is going to spawn a billion copycats in the way that, like, GTA did or something.
Oh, right.
And that doesn't mean it's bad. It's just, like I said, practical and for different reasons. But the game for me is, like, uneven is the best way to describe it, where there are flashes of, like just brilliant moments, you know, and
it never gels.
And then there are things that I find are just, like, torturing, you know. I just unbearable at parts.
I found that about every single Metal Gear game. This is, to me, this is, like, no exception to that particular reaction. Mm-hmm. Like, I've always felt that about 2, about 1, and right. I barely played 3, but...
And I think that, like, a lot of when you see, like, the most uniformly positive responses to the game, I think it has to do with just the reactions to the movie part of it, to the non-interactive part of it. Because when you watch it and you get the sense, and when I keep remembering it now, remembering the coolest things about it, it's like, yeah, this was all stuff in the movies. And because of the way that a movie, that medium is able to, you know, play on your emotions and all this stuff, like... It gives it that much of an extra lead. And if you're thinking, well, why is that a problem? If that's what movies do well, they're in the game. My big thing with the game is, and I want to ask you guys this, is like, I think ultimately I came to conclude that the gameplay detracted from the cut from the movie, and the movie detracted from the game, with a few notable exceptions that I want to get into. But it's like either or. You know, like, I mean, one example to clarify would be if you're watching a long cutscene and you know, you see the geckos and they're doing all these crazy things. They just seem like a remarkable type of enemy. And then when you actually play it, what you then see is that, well, it can do a spin kick, or it can do a few of these, like, really readily identifiable, you know, maneuvers that it's limited to. And if I had gone in without any expectation of what they could potentially do, and it wasn't demonstrated to me in this, like, stunning movie, I would probably be a lot more impressed. Wow, that thing just did a spin kick on
you. You're talking about
instead of, like, it's doing the same fucking kick over and over again.
You're talking about a scene that really frustrated me. Because you're talking about when you see Raiden fighting them with the sword.
Yeah.
And it's like a 20-minute badass cutscene of him fighting it. I'm sitting there
you will never do.
The whole time thinking, I'd like to play this part, and it's not letting me. And then after that cutscene's over, you have what, like, 20 seconds where Snake's like, all right, run. And then all you do is just run through some corridors and don't do anything else. You just get out of the way. And then there's another 20-minute badass fight you can't do. Mm-hmm. And that's really, that was frustrating me at that particular time.
I'm not even being facetious when I say this, but, like, I almost look at it as, like, another kind of category. It's like extended anime is what I think of. You know, when you have, like, extended DVDs or something. Uh-huh. And imagine, like, if when Empire Strikes Back came out, if instead of seeing the movie and then getting this game later, you saw the movie, but then, like, right after the AT-AT scene, then you get to play the Atari 2600 Empire Strikes Back, you know, where you're the snow speeder and you're going side.
Yes. Now,
the comparison I want to make is not that this game is of the quality of that the parts of this that are interactive are the quality of the 2600 game, but the disparity is no less real or pronounced because of it. And it would be like... And it led me to the reverse notion of... In the same way that I look at this game as, like... They approach gameplay in the way that most game designers approach cutscenes. It's like you use something to punctuate your story or your gameplay, and here they use the game to punctuate it. And it's like, losing that train of thought. but I don't know. I mean, yeah, that I think that was. It was an issue for me the whole time. Oh, here's where I'm going. It got to the reverse point of normally when I'm playing a game with a long cutscene, I start to think about, should I just press start now and skip it? Not in Metal Gear, but in most really extended cutscene games.
Yeah.
There were many times in Metal Gear when I wished I could press start and skip the game to just carry on with the movie.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
It's weird because so far, to me, the game itself, and maybe this is just a phenomenon of the first half of the game, but the game itself has been the entertaining part. Like, I really had a lot of fun in the big, open battlefield stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it was really entertaining to me. And when I get to, like, you know, all these scenes where their idea of storytelling is to find some, like, sci-fi technology and tell you every little minute detail about it. It's like they're making The Matrix, and instead of making, like, a 2-hour-long movie, they make a 20-hour-long movie, and they spend 90% of the time telling you exactly how technically The Matrix works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like PowerPoint presentation.
There's a tradition in anime with that, with like Ghost in the Shell and stuff. They got to the point of Ghost in the Shell 2 where there was nothing but footnotes on every page, you know, telling you this is how this cockamamie, you know, but Matrix thing works.
But one of the weird things about it is that I feel like Metal Gear goes out of its way to present itself as an allegory, you know, that like this, it's okay, like don't get caught up in the sci-fi stuff. We're really talking about the real world here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about private military contractors. We're talking about surveillance. We're talking about people watching you and controlling you. But
control, and every time control or war economy comes up, you can see the italics in the script.
Yeah.
Because it'll be the war economy or under control, you know, and then not only will you have the weird thing where you begin the game with the monologue, and then you spend the rest of the game hearing other people repeat your monologue at you as you go, huh? Huh?
Yeah.
So but every opportunity that's there to hammer those points in, the game will take it in a way that almost assumes it maybe rightfully so assumes that its audience is just not going to get it.
Yeah,
which is going to lead me to something I want to talk about later. Is like how when I do see things that I think are flashes of brilliance, I always hit to the point where I wonder. And sometimes it doesn't matter. Intentionality doesn't always matter. You could have, you know, wonderful patterns emerge in a book that everyone in the world is convinced that the author sort of went along with after critics started pointing them out. Oh yeah, I had that in mind all along. Other times they were clearly there, and I never really know. And the reason I doubt myself is because when in every other occasion the game goes out of its way to tell you, oh yeah, this is what we're about.
Yeah.
When something that's genuinely subtle happens, I'm like, is this just a cool coincidence?
An accident,
you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of these things to
But I just didn't understand how they could be so hammering it in your face that the game is allegorical and metaphorical and at the same time, like, spend most of their time, like, comic book dorking it out, trying to give you the real science explanation for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, all the details that do not matter.
Do you also find that, like, giving you those details, it's encouraging you to push further, and then it's ultimately counterproductive because then it leads
then
you
it
to pick
it
apart
ridiculous.
And see the bullshit there. Yeah,
yeah.
I feel that way. It's like, if you just stop, a lot of, like, a good sci-fi will do this. It's very aware of like its limits of its power of explanation. Like, do not go too far in this. Like, Star Wars in the Force versus Star Wars in the second trilogy with midichlorians and stuff, you know, and how a lot of us are like, this is great as long as you know where the mumbo jumbo boundary is and you stay well away from
right.
it. But then when you start to encroach in it and then you provide what amounts to a half-ass explanation of it, you would have been better off to have just not touched it at all. And I think I agree with you. It tries to go so far into things that there's this other thing, but I want to spoil a few things for you.
Hold on. I just want to say that, like, I think the game has moments that are really mysterious that work really well, where you're like, what the fuck is this? Like, the first time I ever saw the egg thing,
mm-hmm.
where it's, you know, you just hear this, like, little girl's voice, she's cooking eggs, and you're like, this is creeping me out. I don't even understand how it works. I almost wish the whole game was like that. Like, it was just
almost, you know, owning up to its nonsense.
Well, yeah, that's how the game starts. Like, literally, you press start, and then you get those commercials of, like, David Hayter and that weird chick.
Yeah,
like,
and I was like, whoa,
would you want
awesome.
Them to be absolutely, like, it might, I like some things by David Lynch and others I don't like, and the ones I like Mulholland Drive, ultimately add up to something.
Yeah.
And in the same way that, like, what's the Killer 7, you know, the game that it's kind of like the game you're describing. Let's just celebrate the fact that nothing is ever going to make a lick of sense, you know.
Yeah.
And I found that ultimately disappointing because I would rather that the real trick is what if you take something that seems just insane and batshit crazy and then it turns out that you can convince a lot of people is not. Maybe that's what Kojima does here. I'm not one of the convinced, but a lot of people are convinced that is actually what's happening.
Yeah.
Taking seeming insanity and then making sense out of it.
To me, so far, and even in 2, it's just been in pure insanity with no payoff.
Right.
Like, and I do enjoy the moments. Like, you know, if you're having a fucking crazy dream, there's going to be these moments that stand out as like, whoa, that was cool. Remember when that happened? That's how this whole game and, you know, 2 felt the same way.
But when the moments in that game that make no sense are the moments when I, like, for some reason, I'm able to detach myself from the bad dialogue writing and the sort of hit you over the head, you know, bullet points like war economy, and appreciate the style of the game, like the cool like character design and visual universe that the game has, which is really interesting to me. Like,
yeah, I love the design.
The way the human characters look so good in that game.
They do.
And I don't even know if it's a technology thing, but like their faces are like really like I buy it in a way that I don't buy a lot of games with like realistic human faces. But then you get, you know, into these or you know how I love like Drebin, his monkey and like weird drinking like narc soda and all that stuff, you know. There's a lot of like arresting images in the game that are really fun, but then they go and ruin it by having so much exposition. It's like the guy desperately needs an editor to say, you know, cut this shit out.
Right.
He's just allowed free reign. Complaint. There's also the old version of it in art, you know, and it's like it takes two people to create a masterpiece painting, one to paint it and the other to hit them over the head and knock them out when it's done. You know? And it's kind of like that with writing here.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go back when you're talking about the way that it wants to explain everything. Like part of the bigger, you know, reaction of the game is that, and then I hear people repeating this over and over again, is that it ties everything up so perfectly. It puts just this bow on everything, and at the end you feel absolutely satisfied. But part of that is trying to kind of come and say, well, you know, all these things that you expected were bullshit, they're not really as bad as you think, and we got answers for them. And one example, now we're in the spoiler zone, is that you got, you know, Vamp. Is he really a vampire? Is he an immortal? Well, no, it's the nanotech that's keeping him alive. So you're like, okay, that's cool. But then they're like, well, what about Liquid and the fact of the Ocelot, that he's been taken over by Liquid by the fact that he had an arm transplant? Doesn't that seem absurd that someone's, especially if you're like me and you don't believe in, you know, the ghost without the shell, that there is no, without the brain and it's functioning, there's no mind. So it's like, did consciousness come from the genes in this fool's arm? And they go, no, that was another trick. Because what really happened is that Ocelot hypnotized himself into thinking he was Liquidus. And so the problem there for me is like, well, that's just about as fucking ridiculous as the arm.
Yeah, why is that better?
And then so they do that. And then another case of it being uneven and backfiring is that then there's a character, and I won't spoil this for you guys because I do think it's cool, but there's a return of a certain character, and it basically amounts to a ghost without a shell that goes around, and in this case has gone around the world to just possess someone else or something. So it's like, that's fine, but the kind of consistency, it's like I could totally accept that this is a world with ghosts, but it makes me not appreciate it when you've gone to such other efforts to say that there are prosaic and realistic, you know, non-supernatural explanations for everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you go out of your way to do that and make people happy with it, but then the same people don't seem to notice or give a shit about the other things, you know?
Yeah. Although, I mean, they're just using, like, fake technology to make a different kind of, like, you know, extra real, you know, mythological thing. You know, it's like
they are, but it's consistent with their world, though.
I mean, shoots you in the head. I mean, it might as well be.
It might as well, but I think that there's a difference there, and that's just because like it's consistent with the world and where it's like everything. It's leading you to everything has to do with nanotech, and that is sort of the logical conclusion to come to within the way that world works. Mm-hmm. But it's not for the other things. It's not for self hypnosis, and it's not for spirits and yeah. all this other kind mm-hmm. of.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally see your point. In the scheme of things, yeah, it's like midichlorians and force, right? They basically said that Vamp has got midichlorians, not the force. Or
yeah.
I mean, yeah, kind of like that. It's the technology versus magic thing.
Yeah.
I remember there was parts of that even in 2, because like there was that girl in part 2 that could like make bullets go around her or something like that. Yeah. And then they like, no, we took that away from you, and then she's still able to do it or something like that after they take it away from her or something.
See, there's an example of, like, Fortune to me was, like, the thing that I remember most clearly about Metal Gear Solid 2, because that battle and all of her cutscenes just, to me, just stuck out as, like, now that, by itself, taken out of even the context of all that's going on, just a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I kind of feel the same way about even, to a lesser degree, like, the Beauty and the Beast squad
battle.
Yeah,
when you see them, you're like, that's super cool. I mean, for all of us that grew up watching Voltron and stuff, and I've actually compared the boss battles in here to, like, the Robeast fights at the end of any episode of Voltron, you're like, I feel that. Like, that's cool. That looks awesome. The design works really cool.
Yeah.
And it's great to see them fight and stuff.
I mean, did you have fun playing it? Like, I get the feeling that I might be the only person who was enjoying.
It was uneven like that. I would go from moments of thinking, like, this is totally fun, to this, like, to actually screaming at my TV, fuck you. Fuck this game. I'm not going to do more. And, like, I do want to get into that because we got specific examples. And Sean is at, like, at the first part where you hit that stuff.
Oh, you guys are going to make me not want to play it.
But that's fine because I think there's good. Let me give you something good first, I want to say. Like, while I do think you could really break the game down and atomize it and say there's the game. Dude, just serious, man. If you guys are just going to be looking at each other like this is boring as fuck,
I'm not looking at him like it's boring.
All right. Sorry, dude.
I mean, well, you guys should fight.
No, it's nothing like that, but it's like, I mean, if it is, I understand. If you don't want it spoiled and it's boring and we decided before we came to do this that we're going to spoil it, then it's like, if instead of being bumming, then just don't bum.
That's cool.
Don't bum out.
Go on. You're reading into it. Go on.
Awkward moments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. FTW.
So, like, I think you could separate a lot of the gameplay from the movies and they'll do fine in either. Well, the movie would do better off on its own in some cases. But a few moments where they really come together, or like with a few themes, they really come together and it works well. One is just like with the age and like obsoleteness, like it's just this theme that goes through the whole thing, right? I mean, your Snake is this living relic, and right from the very beginning, it's establishing that this new breed of soldiers has got another generation of nanotech, and it suppresses their, you know, their shell shock and their ability to feel remorse and all these things. And he's kind of like bitter about it, and it's like, well, you know, you had to fight in my day for this. You had to acquire tactics through, you know, you had to basically survive battle in order to get this. And it sets this cool thing up. And so at first I was like, well, I wish they'd do something more with this, but I have, like, it's the perfect setup for him to get together with the militia. And you actually do in the gameplay, but it never puts a face or anything or motive or even gives a voice to individual militia members at any point. And I thought that was weird because, you know, when Beauty and the Beast first come in and there's this long scene and they just kill like 20 militia guys. Mm-hmm. And then when it ends, I just see all their guns flashing on the ground and I was like, hot damn. It's like I just pulled like the casino lever, you know? But later on, though, I think it does really cool things with it. And what it does is like it leverages the longevity of the series to make us feel old as players, to parallel it. So because I look at like Snake's premature aging as kind of like this metaphor for like the rate that video game technology ages. So like 5 years, which is the time between a sequel or something and a generation, is actually a long time. Mm-hmm. And so now what I have to do is give you some evidence that this isn't just me making shit up. And like in Act 4, it starts off with a quick little, it actually loads up an emulation of the game that Jeff is playing of Metal Gear Solid. And when you play a section of that, what it does is it's not only him, it's there for Snake to be remembering his own past, but then it makes you remember your past with the game, and it also makes you aware of the extent to which you've aged, because it's like, dude, did this look this bad back then?
Yeah.
Has this much time transpired? Was it this cumbersome and awkward to control, you know? And so that whole act really starts to develop it. Now, like, this is going to start to really spoil it. But then the next phase would be you're walking around. You return to Shadow Moses, which is the setting of the first game. And after that, that little quick replay of the original scene, you're in a new rendering of it. And you're walking around, and it's exactly the same, but all updated. And you look, and you remember after you've just seen it, you know, the old camera positions and stuff. And then they like, there's a part where you walk in a room where you used to go to get a perk or something. And then the camera pans to the camera on the wall, the security camera, and it rusts and it falls off and falls down. And that is super cool, because then what happens is in this new version of it, you have alternatives. You have stand-ins for cameras and stuff. You have these mobile androids and stuff. You have the geckos that are actually acting as turrets now in this reiteration of it. You have the fact that the camera for the game has changed itself. The way that the camera you're controlling is radically different. So it starts to pile on this sort of thing without being heavy-handed. And that's where I came back to the point where, is this just something that steamrolled and ended up supporting its own thing? But then more evidence that they know what they're doing is that you ultimately go down, you fight through the same levels. It's constantly revising what you've experienced. The battle with Sniper Wolf is updated, and it's a battle against Crying Wolf, who's also like a sniper type thing, but instead of like associating herself with a wolf, she's actually like a robotic wolf, you know. And then you go and you fight, you actually get down to where the Metal Gear Rex was that you fight in the first game, and it is kind of like Snake. It's now obsolete technology, you know. It's this old thing that was the big threat of the game before, but subsequent Metal Gears came out and there were new Metal Gears, and this is just this old relic there. And you end up getting in it and fighting your way out. And you're specifically, you fight your way out the same route where you were in a Jeep before, and you get out. And just little things like that. It's like, this is cool. It's taking the old bad enemy, and it's putting you in charge of it as the old bad dude. And then it sort of like dies down after that. But I think all of that is like a really, really good pairing of gameplay and, you know, the theme and the movie and the gameplay, all of it coming together really well.
Then you have the moments like in Act 3. Where you get Ava saying, all of these children of mine, these PMC rebels, used to play FPS games, and that detached them from reality, and now that's why they fight, and they don't have any... like, seriously, she said that, I was like, you're fucking kidding me. Is he about to make an FPS games are ruining youth speech in Metal Gear Solid 4?
After trying to emulate FPSs with Metal Gear Solid 4?
So there's those ham-handed moments where you're just like... Maybe he isn't being subtle.
that plays at odds with it.
Maybe he, like, because that was like the least subtle. That was like the most laugh out loud moment I had in the whole game so far. And this came after like 45 minutes of exposition of, like, you know, biblical exposition of this person beget this person, and then this person met this person, and then they had a twin, and then the twin had two twins, and then their DNA mingled and became a second, third.
Are those things interesting to you? I mean,
No, that part I was ready to just like, okay, shut up.
And can you skip this shit at all?
You have to skip the whole thing. You could just fast forward.
Oh, you can't.
Right. Yeah, you don't know that it's not going anywhere or that you don't care. I mean, my problem with this specifically is that I don't retain plot details of Metal Gear games the way some people do. I mean, the people who love this shit are the people who remember
who all these
people are. And I'm just sitting there going, I don't remember any of this crap.
Right. Like, that's the deal for me when I watch it. I felt that it just is like, you know, back to the whole thing with hitting the artist over the head when to stop. It fucks itself up because it will have a number of cool concepts and scenarios and threats. And you're like, if you were to make just a movie of this, if this was just like CG, you know, anime movie or something, and if they stopped here, like, this is cool. I like it. I mean, I'm not going to compare it to like the greatest stuff ever, but it would be a pretty badass, you know, like anime. But then they just keep going, and they get to the parts where you're talking about, where you find out that, I don't even know if I should spoil, but at the very end, there's just some real numbskull shit, you know? And it's like, well,
surprising.
If you had just not done that, if you would have been satisfied that you had enough to thrill people with and enough to keep people thinking with, without having...
That might be me.
Without having to you know, go that far, it would have been better off.
And I'm ultimately frustrated by what they choose to show you in cutscenes that looks like it'd be cool to play versus what you actually play. Because, again, in Act 3, and I think you're probably about to get here, unless you already did it, there's this scene where you're sneaking around as a civilian following this resistance person. And it's the most long, protracted, horrible sequence in the whole game, as far, mm-hmm. as, far as I'm concerned. And it's like half hour of just following a guy around, and it's just not fun.
Is it persnickety, like you get caught easy?
It's not. It's more like his reactions and just don't make any sense sometimes.
It's frustrating and super long. It's longer than it should be, I think.
Yeah, there was nothing interesting happened the whole time I did it. I was expecting some sort of like, okay, this part's going to be tricky because something's going to show up. And like Otacon mentions like, oh, there's a helicopter now. And then I never saw a helicopter.
Oh, like, sounds like the pacing.
Watch out for the spotlight. And I'm like, what spotlight?
For me, that was a good, conceptually, like, this is a great way to change the pace. Because in Acts 1 and 2, you go from the war zone stuff, and you go from the big, you know, on rails battle at the end, and the big high action cutscenes to, like, something that's subdued, like a quiet night in Eastern Europe, mm-hmm. and you're going to be stalking someone. But then the gameplay, it's designed as, if you basically take a city, a rudimentary city, and you make it as a big, you know, maze, and you have to find a guy who's an informer for this resistance, and you basically then have to stalk him and follow him to the safe house. But this is easier said than done. It takes a long time. I mean, where you'll trace him, you know, you'll track him, and then you'll hit a load screen as you're going into another part of the town.
Yeah.
And then you'll just continue to do that. And then it starts to complicate it by saying that, well, he can't get arrested, and he's gonna, or he'll actually stop and wait if there are like PMCs in the area. So you have to take out the PMCs. So then I in my case, I ran into this problem of like you take out the PMCs that are arresting him, and then he tries to kill you, and you're like, everyone else in the game understood right away that I was like their buddy if I took out the PMCs, mm-hmm. and that wasn't so bad. But then he would immediately run back. He would book it somewhere else, and it would like restart the whole thing. So then you go back behind him and follow him through it again. And in my case, something would always go wrong where he would see me and freak out, and he would do it over and over again. And I got to, that was one of those points where I wished I could press start and skip it. I was like, yep. I don't need to know. The movie's going to fill me in on what happens next. I don't physically need to do this. It's not.
You know what, why not? You know. I'm ready for that game. Seriously. Like,
this part is
like you
me
should
off.
Just be able to skip it.
Alone
you buy
in the
fucking
dark,
game,
the
you should be able to skip
yeah,
it.
Yeah, actually.
You know?
Alone in the Dark will let
yeah,
you do
that. Alone in the Dark lets you do that.
Well, I'm happy
ready
for
that.
It.
Yeah.
So how long would it be if you just kept skipping every single... If you're just like, I don't care. Maybe. I don't care about the cutscene.
Still would be over 10 hours long.
Yeah.
Act 3 is so uneven, too, because after that, I basically remember that is that miserable section we just described, a ton of cutscenes, and then the next one is absolutely on rails, like Time Crisis without a light gun with a controller. It looks really nice.
Looks fantastic.
But it's absolutely, like, immaterial. It's like you can't die. There's no, you just, you know, Sean, you tested it, right? You just,
yeah. I was, it's literally you're, like, on a motorcycle, like on the back of someone else's motorcycle, Sean, you're controlling the motorcycle, just shooting, you know, the targets as they pop out. And I noticed that it was going so fast. And again, it looks incredible. This is
I call that the GILF cycle, by the way.
The GILF cycle?
The grandma I'd like to fuck cycle. not really. No, okay. Not because of her, but just because it's like an old chick with like her titties hanging out.
Yeah, her breasts
and you're on
like
the back of her bike. So why not?
There's one particular fade from a picture to her that's just particularly disturbing. I don't even remember that one. But anyway, you're on the back of this motorcycle, and you know all the geckos are jumping out, and you know different military guys are shooting from you, and it looks unreally good. Like I think this is probably like the moment where I had the jaw drop moment. I'm like, wow, this looks like a fucking great city. And like the action here is just so well choreographed. But it is just like, you know, moving your gun target over the things that as they pop out. And then
yeah,
you get down 1 out of 10 and you don't feel any threat when you stop shooting and like you're not really going to die. And then you load in the next area. And I'm like, I could have probably not really shot any of those.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, like, could you just have sat there?
It's more of like, it's like a,
with a few exceptions, I think you probably to keep it from looping, maybe you probably have to kill some of the guys.
So what you're saying is,
it just didn't feel like that I was in that much peril the whole time. It was like an interactive cutscene in a lot of
ways. That's what I was going to say. It's almost like the things that you were saying before that were like badass things you wish you could have played. Like, this is something that totally could have just been a cutscene.
Yeah, that could have just been a cutscene.
But there's also this...
But I'm glad I got to play it. I guess if it had been a cutscene, I probably would have been complaining that I couldn't have played that.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe make it a little more challenging.
Before that, like, I want to talk about the action in Act 2, because I think it's another example, and, like, this is where we're all at, you know? It's another example of how the game's uneven, because it's almost like it'll suggest an idea and never develop it or follow through on it. So, like,
yes.
For example, when you're on top of Drebin Stryker, which is, you know, his vehicle, and the guys are acting like zombies and coming after you. You're like, oh, this could be cool. What if there's this entire level is basically like Resident Evil 5 or something, and they really did it where you're running from these guys. It changes the pace of it. It's not stealth, and you're dealing with it. But instead, it's just like a... Here's just like a little after dinner mitt. Here's something, if we had more, if we really wanted to do something with it, maybe we could have, but it's just like, just enough to make you wish they had. And then the rest of it's an on rails, point your gun at whatever comes around the corner, you know, as you're on our joyride.
Yep.
That was kind of disappointing to me.
Well, there's this like line of stuff going through the game that I feel like is intentionally video gamey, like intentionally limited, intentionally sort of old school, like in the they keep on bringing these things up almost in that way that he likes to like break the pretension by reminding you that this is just a silly video game.
Like entertained the thought too that, like, you know, I was talking about how I see like outdatedness and obsolescence as a theme. It's like the theme that the game itself is a living relic, right? That it's like it exemplifies. It's like the last gasp of an old way of making games, even though I don't really think that. I mean, it was just like, it's something I entertained, but because there are some parts, like you're saying, they're so rudimentary and they're so gamey.
Yeah.
And they're so, like, a lot of people reacted that way to the scene we were talking about. I see a bunch of people calling it last gen. And I was like, oh, is that part of the point there? And there's another thing at the end that they would lead you to believe that. And it's like when you get in a fight with Liquid, it switches, like the health bars kind of appear on the screen and you're like, oh shit, it's going to do a pastiche of a fighting game. And it does. But then you're like, okay, this is a great joke. It should just be a sight gag and it should be really quick, right? But then it becomes a grueling fight with the shitty version, with the shitty makeshift version of, you know, of a fighting game interface and guys with multiple health bars. So you're doing it, and I died like 5 times on it. So go ahead and send your mail. I'm a pussy. But I died 5 times on that, and I'd get them down to like the last health bar or something. And it's like, dude, I went from smiling and thinking this is a rad joke to
hating it,
to wanting to skip it again too. It's like, but it's not
again,
fucking
it's
funny
another,
anymore.
It's another, another, you know, video gamey thing. I mean, it's the authentic old school video game experience. You should
it's true.
Be brutally frustrated. Hard. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like
punishingly cheap.
Yeah, there are a lot of things about the game that I'm sort of impressed by the fact that they're willing to keep that stuff. Like it's just straight up, obviously, you know, a few people's idea of a good time, not like, you know, a focus grouped, tightly made like thrill ride roller coaster Call of Duty 4. You know, like all fun all the time.
Yeah, say what you will, you definitely get the sense that this is.
Yeah,
Kojima's game through and through. This is totally an auteur game,
and that goes back to like I was saying. I'm glad that potential exists because most people could not make that kind of game, at least with the budget that this one had.
Yeah,
as like most the flagship PS3 product that everyone has been waiting for.
It would be awesome though if, you know, a game like that came out and it really did just blow you away. Like that just doesn't happen.
No,
you know. I mean, it's a nice game. It's cool, but I'm always like waiting for that game that's going to come out of nowhere and be like, holy shit.
That we really feel it is a masterpiece. That we feel that isn't like losing your fucking sense of proportion to say that about, you know.
Yep.
Like I just think about is like if there was enough, I mean, like to go back to, because I know people, I think people will probably have fun like looking at that obsolescence theme and see other things. And it kind of like lets you look at them differently and get something else out of them. So one example, everyone was posting this video of when Otacon's saying like, since I need you to insert disc 2 now, Snake. And everyone's like, look, they're making fun of Xbox 360. Like, this is Kojima saying, fuck you, you know, because this all, talk about proxy wars. All the game is nothing but a proxy war for fucking fanboys, you know?
Yeah.
And so they're like, this is making fun of that. But instead, it was making, it fits into this theme of like, this is when, you know, this is the way that you remember it. Here's another way of saying times have changed and, like, you know, another way of saying that Snake has changed and stuff and, like, that fit in with that. There's this other theme of control, which, of course, you know, they keep saying. And I think there is more room for that to have, like, fit in with the actual gameplay. They do with the boss Screaming Mantis, which is not, shouldn't be a surprise or much of a spoiler because it's a marionette artist, right?
When you're
first seeing him, it's, you know, the puppeteer.
And like the original Mantis.
Like right.
Mantis. You had to change your controller port.
Right.
Yeah. Which was one of the coolest moments in a game for me.
In that game,
that was awesome.
So like there's, it does definitely hit on that theme there. And it's actually the weapon when you beat that boss, you get a weapon, and it's like the voodoo doll, which you're supposed to be able to, like, you shoot someone with it and then you're able to control them, except there's no one else to fight after that point that it will work on. So it's kind of like, I was like, oh shit, maybe I can use it on a second playthrough. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, I can't yet. So I don't know. But that, I was thinking it would have been, it's another area where they could have, like, had so much fun with control, right? Because, I mean, we're Snake's puppeteers on the other end. And it's like, if there would have been some moment where, I mean, I'm not saying this because I think I'm a game designer or something, but it's just, like, what comes to mind. It could have been funny if you do something boneheaded with Snake, and he's just like, Otacon, I don't know why I just did this. Stupid. Why did I do that? You know? Like, I mean, there's like, a ton of potential there. Yeah. But that's one where I'm not convinced in that category that fully does allow with it. The last, you know, kind of, I think Act 5 kind of goes back to me to where what I felt about Act 3. But overall, that's just it. Yeah, it's like, it's hard to say. People want you to love or hate something, and it's neither way. I'm glad I played it. I like it. I'm glad it's out, but it's like there's so much of it that I think is either annoying or just absurd and could have done better. And then, but for every one of those, there's something I think is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, the unevenness of it is kind of a drive, too, because you know that if this particular thing sucks, that you know that around the corner there could be something fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Because that's just how this game works.
And that's why you keep playing, too. Yeah. I mean, because it does establish that anything can happen. So it's like, let's just see what else does happen.
Yeah, even in, like, that, like, tracking sequence. I don't know if you did that where you're, like, looking at the ground with your night vision goggles for the footprints. Like, if you took a wrong turn, did you end up in the crop circle?
Did I take a wrong turn? I took every wrong turn.
Yeah,
it just, like, I visited every section of that entire map, I swear to God. I never figured out.
Really?
I never figured out what made her footprints different from the other footprints.
Do you have an HD TV.
Yeah.
I don't. So I chalked it up to standard def, not telling me the difference.
See, she had, like, to me, it was very clear triangular heel print.
Are you just, like, some sort of awesome tracker?
Apparently.
Like, look, it's obvious that she was wearing high heels, man. I mean, just look down there in the dirt.
And I was actually upset when Raiden called to say, like, because at one point those disappear.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, shit, they disappeared. Now what? And I was upset that Raiden called before I could figure out that that she had been picked up, and now there's heavier, like, darker footprints that you can track because they're deeper.
I didn't get that at all somehow. I
was upset that that was told to me.
That section was really weird. It was disappointing for me because the setup was that, okay, this is going to be an extraordinarily complex section. We're really going to, like, try something here. And I was like, oh, God, this is, like, part two of the battle with the boss, the end from the sniper from Metal Gear Solid 3. I don't know if you got to him or not. And it's saying, you know, it's telling you about wind and people's ability to smell you. And then so I was assuming, like, I was like, oh, shit, this is the battle with Crying Wolf. I'm almost like, this is going to be fucking rad. Not only am I stalking, trying to find where Naomi is, but I have to avoid being stalked. But then you go through and there's nothing that was stalking you at all.
And in fact, it was just like something like straight out of the original Metal Gear.
Yeah,
you're just in this, like, open wild environment.
Right, and every intersection,
like, an artificial labyrinth of
wilderness. Yeah, there's a honeycomb of, like, of trails, and you go through there. What about, like, did it ever bother you, like, nitpicking shit when you were playing, like, the action levels, and it felt like, okay, these guys are clearly more qualified to make a stealth game than an action game, and so if I really wanted to go all out and play action and be like, then this is fair to compare this to, like, other mediocre shooter games and stuff. A lot of, like, third-person ones I might have played, like, you know, Shellshock NAM or something. And it kind of was reminding me of that with, like, I mean, it's got the old problem of infinite spawns. Guys, they're materializing out of walls, and you could hit them with the mortar for 20 minutes. And, I mean, there are times it was a way to get a bunch of points if you want. I mean, you're simultaneously raising the price of items. But I think I was outpacing it because of the raw number of guys I killed.
Right.
It was like a fucking charnel house in this one alley because they kept just coming to the same spot. And
the three guys come out at the same time to take their positions in one building. Yeah.
So sometimes little things like that would annoy me.
The actual mechanics of fighting to be pretty satisfying. Sometimes, like, in close quarters, like a lot of third-person shooters, it felt like like I would fight to get my aim around, so that was a little awkward. But like if as long as they were, you know, 10 feet away, it was a pretty satisfying third person shooter. Yeah. I don't understand the point of first person view. They stick
either.
That gun like right in the middle of your
possible
screen.
To, yeah,
like how could that possibly
right? And then third, you have a laser sight that...
outside of snipers. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The sniper rifle is another thing entirely. But why you would ever want to block your entire screen with this weapon model? I don't.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
And then there's like I let it go. I was like, this wouldn't be, you know, anything that truly disturbed me. But it was kind of funny. We were pointing out where you'll be in the middle of this pitched battle with the rebels fighting on your side, and you're taking down the PMCs, and you shoot one guy, and it's like it sets off the exclamation above his head, and suddenly everyone on the battlefield just wants to fight you, and the alarm counter's going off. You're like, what? The fucking mortars and machine guns and grenades weren't enough. And like I had to. You know,
the Normandy beach invasion is going on, but then they're just like, oh, that guy!
I think the most fun I had in the war environment was where you're sort of like raiding that villa toward the end of like the all-out war section, where you can take, I took this path like up into the mountains where the snipers were hanging out up there, and I just like picked those guys off one by one, and then you get to the edge of the cliff and you come up to one of those mortar stands and bombard all the guys in the villa, although they just keep on it.
In the same spot.
That does make it like less satisfying. Yeah,
it does, because it's like it's. I felt in those moments that, like, you know, if you were on like a Disneyland ride, like Pirates of the Caribbean, and then if the ride broke down, and so while it would be super cool if you momentarily pass and see the dog trying to the prisoner trying to get the keys from the dog, then you're stuck there for 15 minutes watching the prisoner trying to get the keys from the dog.
And they repeat their dialogue.
Yeah, they do repeat the dialogue in the exact same way. You know, it's like, shit, my boat's supposed to be moving, man. Get
you shouldn't have heard this three times.
WD-40 on this thing.
It's weird because they give you so much feeling of like openness. Like you could attack this in various ways. Like this, like it's really up to you. This very, it's on rails, but it's like wide, like so wide. And you could really, you know, sneak in, or you could mortar the hell out of people, or you could use your sniper rifle, or you could do, you know, you could do a lot of things. But in the end, you feel like you can't. You don't have the control to like change the game world. Doesn't matter what you do, it is just always going to be like dudes pouring out of there,
right?
And rebels pouring out behind you, and that's never going to change no matter what you do, you know?
Yeah,
and
I even felt like the incentive for doing things differently was simply your own enjoyment, which is a good incentive in its own way.
Sure, but
if I did make the effort to like get into a building, I was like, oh, why did I get in here? There's like an ammo clip, but I wasted 5 ammo clips getting in here in the first place. So it just never seemed like you never found something in those special places,
right?
That was worth getting there for.
Kind of a Hobson's choice for me is like, did anyone not help the rebels?
I always did.
It seems like counterproductive too, because when the game was described, at first I was like, oh, this is kind of like one of the stalker scenarios where there's just a bunch of factions and they align with you based on your actions, but really, there's PMCs which will never align with you, and they're the enemy, and you just happen to be fighting alongside rebels, and if you shoot one of them, then they'll attack you, but if you don't, they'll help you. But I was like, why would you want to shoot them?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand why. Who would do that?
I want them to have the hearts over their head and turn blue when you look at them.
So that kind of seemed like a non-mechanic to me. It really just it really deflated to.
And I never really got the sense. I never got the sense of when I triggered it or not. Like, sometimes they would still look at me and be like, oh, and I'm like, wait, I just helped you guys.
Can I ask a question? You know that area, the honeycomb outside where you're tracking?
Uh-huh.
There was a moment where you find, like, the woman's bra.
Oh, my God.
Right? Okay, and there's some really gross thing that happens.
There's a dude spanking in the
Yeah,
the
is
cabin.
That what happened? Because I shot that guy in the head.
Yeah, he was jerking off.
I was like, I couldn't figure it. But the thing was, you pass this girl's bra, and right when you show up, you see this guy in the corner, like, bent over with like hearts coming out of him, and I thought he was like bent over her.
Oh my god!
And I shot him in the head.
What they do when you put the Playboy magazines down? Too.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
even understand that though, because I never thought she was wearing a bra. Her cleavage is always like
her cleavage is always.
She has like the craziest Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition cleavage. Mm-hmm. You know, for a woman in a research.
those gags though, and there are quite a few of them in there, I think were worked better in the game portion, which is that being an example. But when they were in the cutscenes, they were pretty embarrassing. Like when Johnny Akiba is like shitting in his pants for like 10 minutes.
That's stupid. That's
why do you? And why does it show his pants? That was the disgusting thing. There's like a moment where you're in battle and this guy is with you and he's literally shitting his pants during battle. You're shooting people and this guy's over there going, oh no! But then
he's not exaggerating.
But then in the cutscenes, they keep on swinging around to show you that the back of his pants are all shitty. It's gross. So gross.
And it goes on and on. And there's a point at first where it's like, I thought the monkey's wearing a diaper. Then there's the when you acquire the barrel, there's a dude you acquire the guy was in there shitting underneath the barrel.
That was Johnny, wasn't it?
It's like this should sound like it would be right up my alley. But I don't know if I'm like I have a double standard, but it worked better.
Some animators had to spend time like rendering that. That's what they did.
Oh yeah, it was
make the shit stain bigger.
And the Folio people, they're probably like, we need about 20 minutes of
poop sounds.
Yeah, shitting sounds. God. And like just you know, like churning bowels.
Oh god.
Magma gut.
Oh god.
Okay,
that's great.
Anthony's waiting for the Nurgle line.
Wow.
That Johnny Nurgle, dude, that's how the guy's name.
All right.
Are we getting kicked out? Well, are we getting kicked
Sean,
out?
Well, it was fun. Come back.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Indeed, Sean. This was the open invitation. Anytime.
Maybe I'll cut off my arm and you can graft it onto one of you and then you can hypnotize yourself to think I'm
that's an idea.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh yeah.
Stand in the mirror and tell
would I get your WoW character?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yes, you would. If you believed.
All right. I thought Legendary Threat is next.
If there's a zero, there's always going to be a one. So
thanks.
Let's cut out the zero. Let's go.
Yeah, indeed.
And remember, let's see, I'm gone for 3 weeks, but the Brodeo show go on. Mm-hmm. And then the dolphin will be here.
Flipper will be taking my place.
Flipper is the new host.
All right. Yeah.
All right. We're out.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Sean. Don't go, man.
All right, I'm still here.